Welcome to episode 20 of The Invictus Myth. 20 episodes seems like cause for celebration. We're a young show, but growing. And you can help by letting your friends know about us. Join our new Facebook page at facebook.com/TheInfectiousMyth or on Twitter at InfectiousMyth without the. Send me an email at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. I'd love to hear your comments, whether they're positive or negative, and your suggestions for future guests. If you'd like to sponsor the show or give our listeners a discount on a product or service, please contact me. Today I'm very pleased to have with me Sheila Matthews, who co-founded AbleChild.org along with Patricia Weathers. She will talk about the problems with giving psychiatric drugs to children and also the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings in Newtown, Connecticut. Those of you who are unaware of the association of these drugs with violence or suicidal behavior may find this connection a bit strange, but stick with us. Sheila has advocated against the use of psychotropic drugs across the U.S. She testified in favor of a Connecticut state law that would prohibit school officials from prescribing these drugs and pushed successfully to remove certain antidepressants from use on foster care children and wards of state. She's been interviewed by CNN, Fox, Time Magazine, and now, for the first time, on The Infectious Myth. Welcome to the show, Sheila.
Thank you so much, David, for having me on.
Well, I'm pleased to what you said about the Newtown Sandy Hook shootings. It got me interested, but obviously there's a lot of background. So before we get to that, I'd just like to ask you how you personally got first interested in problems with giving psychiatric drugs to children.
Sure. As a mom of two boys, I was coerced by my school system to do an ADHD checklist on my son, and I was given pro-drug information, was not given any alternatives, and basically was told that there was nothing they could do to help me. So I was taken back by that, and I was preparing for my IEP meeting, turned on
IEP.
It's an individualized education plan. Parents might know of it, where
okay.
The school sits with you and decides what's best to approach education for your child.
Okay.
And so I was preparing for that meeting. I was very intimidated, and I turned on C-SPAN. I saw my co-founder now, Patricia Weathers, testifying regarding behavioral drugs in schools, and reached out to Congress, got her phone number, spent about an hour on the phone with her, and gave me the courage to stand up to my school system and say, no, I do not believe in ADHD, and I want educational solutions. So we decided at that moment to join forces and help other moms that were also being coerced.
Yes. Well, luckily, my children are a little bit older, and I don't think they suffered from this. And I'm also up in Canada. Maybe this whole thing hit a little bit later. But I think at least two of my children and myself could have been diagnosed with ADHD quite easily. Because it's so much a matter of an opinion. So that was, you know, your personal brush with this whole problem. But why did you set up an organization to help other people? Like, what led you to get so deep into it?
Because Patricia and I were finding out from other parents that their children were actually dying from the psychiatric drugs that were being prescribed to their children at the urging of the school system, and they were not given any justice, and today still have not received any support or justice for wrongfully being diagnosed and dying. And our passion just was like ignited at that point, and we decided we have to reach out to mothers and we have to change this course that society is on. And so therefore we decided to organize and create a 501c3 organization, and we successfully did that, and we've been fighting it ever since, trying to get informed consent to parents.
So how Do children die from taking psychiatric drugs? What are the how does taking psychiatric drugs lead to the death of a child?
Very good question. The two parent members that we have that their children died was sudden heart problems. One of our moms, her daughter died in her arms as she rushed her to the hospital, and this was all because the teacher thought she was disorganized, and now her child is dead.
Disorganized?
Disorganized, meaning she couldn't focus, she lacked organizational skills, and the recommendation was to place her child on one of these psychiatric drugs. So Vicki Dunkel did that, and her daughter Shayna died in her arms at the hospital when she received a call from the school nurse saying, your daughter's having some problems. And so, you know, that's one way you can die. The other way is a psychiatric drug-induced suicide, mm-hmm. where children as young as 12 years old are hanging themselves, and even younger. So there's an array of deadly side effects from the psychiatric drugs.
Yeah, and recently I interviewed David Healy, and you probably know that name. He talked a lot about the suicide risk of antidepressants and some of the other health risks from them. I wasn't aware of the risk of heart attacks. He also talked about the risk of birth defects and lots of other things. I mean, not in obviously in high school children, hopefully, that aren't pregnant, but, you know, if they get on drugs in high school, they may stay on them after high school as well.
Well, also the Berkeley study out of California indicated that Ritalin is a gateway drug. It is in the class by the DEA comparable to cocaine. So most of the children that I have been, the parents of the children that I have been working with over the years, their children go on to heavier drugs like heroin and Oxycontin, and it becomes a lifelong addiction. So parents aren't told that when they are being diagnosed with this subjective checklist. So therefore, our organization has trying to protect the rights of parents.
Are some of these drugs addictive? Like, what happens if you stop taking Ritalin? Can you just stop cold turkey, or do you go through withdrawals?
You go through severe withdrawals, and I really do not recommend going off psychiatric drugs without the oversight of a medical doctor. Dr. Peter Bragan is a very outspoken psychiatrist that he has written a book about withdrawal. It's really worth the read. Because, again, drug-induced suicide is one of the side effects of coming off the drug and actually going on the drug.
And, of course, that, to a lot of people, interpret withdrawal symptoms as meaning, I can't live without this drug. Like, they don't understand that it's withdrawal. They think that their problems are returning with a vengeance once they stop, which keeps people taking the drug.
Right, and the fact is that the withdrawal symptoms is a sudden thought of, gee, I should kill myself. You know, I actually have personal experience with that. I worked on the death of my brother-in-law, who was taken down off the drug not appropriately by a psychiatrist, and basically went to the cleaners, was talking to people, and the next thing you know, he drove off and killed himself. It was out of the blue. It's not something you can control, that thought of, I just need to kill myself. It's an actual side effect of the drug.
Right.
So that also prompted me to really get out there as an organization to warn parents about the dangers of a sudden withdrawal.
Yes, so getting on them is a problem, but getting off them also becomes a problem. And children aren't really, they're not, if they're under the age of consent, they presumably are put on the drugs rather than choosing to take them. And so if they they have to understand and then decide to quit, which must be very difficult because they've been told at some point in their life they need these drugs, and now somebody maybe is saying that maybe you should get off them, but it must be tough for a lot of the kids.
Right, and again, that goes to the information that the teachers and the public school is receiving from the pro-drug industry and the organizations such as NAMI, National Alliance of Mentally Ill, where they're promoting drug use without safety concerns, without public health concerns. Basically, they're taking the information and filtering it through the school system. So as a mom and a dad, you're getting information that is slanted. There's something wrong with your child. And behaviors change, and children's minds are developing, and it becomes a lifelong addiction, and there's a tremendous amount of side effects.
Yes, I actually remember I was put in a, when I was in grade school, I was put in a school for supposedly advanced, or what they called it, children, but I was so disruptive in the class that the teacher put a cubicle in the classroom for me so that I couldn't see or be seen by anybody else. But the nice thing about a cubicle is they could take the cubicle away and there was no after effects apart from maybe slight humiliation. But now I'm sure they would have wanted me on some kind of a drug.
Well, this is our concern. Mm-hmm. As an organization, we want parents to realize that there are alternatives. I mean, personally, I went to educational resources outside of the public school system.
Right.
My son at 7 was told that if he did not go on these, psychiatric drugs, that he would self-medicate. And the fact is he never went on them. He's 21 now and has a career, graduated early from college, and so, you know, it's not evidence-based. It's subjective, and the diagnosis is not based in science, and it's scary for parents out there. So that's why Able Child got involved in the mission of informed consent and the right to refuse psychiatric drugs.
Right. Informed consent is important. One of the things you say in your, I think in your mission statement for the organization is you want, well, you say parents for label and drug-free education. So we've talked about drugs. What do you mean by label-free education?
Right. Well, when the school starts diagnosing your child with ADHD that is subjective, that's a label. And that label follows your child all the way up through the school system. Parents don't realize that you're actually saying, my child is mentally ill. And then with all of what's going on in society right now, your rights, your liberties are affected. Your child's future is affected by that label.
Right, right. You had on the board William Glasser. It looks like he's passed away, but one thing he said that was interesting was he did not believe in the concept of mental illness and this was something organically wrong with the brain which could be confirmed by a pathologist. So these diagnoses like ADHD are presumably done by a checklist of behaviors. There's no chemical or other kind of or biological test for these conditions, right? They're just behaviors that a psychiatrist says, this is ADHD, this is something else.
Right. There's no blood test. There's no brain scan. There's no x-rays. And basically, the teacher fills out this checklist of, does your child look out the window? Is your child fresh? Is your child creative? Does your child not like rules? And at home, you're filling out that same checklist because you think you're
right.
Helping.
You're
right. Like, oh, I want to fill this out because I want to get my child services that my child needs. And
right.
Then based on your checklist and the school's checklist and the teacher and the school psychologist, boom, you now have a label.
Right, and the label makes it very easy for somebody to look in a book and say, okay, if we have this label, then there's a drug that goes with that label or our choice of drugs, and it's a pretty clear path.
That's right.
And that book is the DSM, right, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. And what's your concern about that? You made some comments about that.
Well, you know, I choose to send my children, as most parents do, to school to be educated, not medicated. And while there might be a huge booming industry in psychiatry, I don't think it's appropriate that we are forced as Americans to buy into a billing book. Because, again, remember, each diagnosis brings this label, but also brings state and federal funding to further that diagnosis. So, I have concerns that lawmakers have bought into it hook, line, and sinker. That is a concern. But my focus really is on informed consent, making sure parents know that they have the right to say, no, I don't want this.
But informed consent, I think you said something about that also, or maybe I was reading it elsewhere, but informed consent means you have to have a lot of information. Like if you're informed about the condition of ADHD, but you're not informed about, say, the side effects of the medications or that they may be addictive or things like that, that's not really informed consent.
That's right. And the Supreme Court has ruled that that's mandatory in giving informed consent, all the information. Made famous by the Willowbrook case where children and adults were being warehoused in a psychiatric facility in New York and massively drugged, abused until the media came in and put a glaring spotlight on it, and that case went all the way up to the Supreme Court. So the history of the mental health industry has been to stamp on our liberties, to take our rights away, to label us mentally ill, to collect money and warehouse people. And, you know, I haven't seen much change over the years from when I started working on this issue. There's a lot more awareness, but, again, there's a lot more evidence being hidden from the consumer.
Yeah, there is some coercion, and one can see the trend going towards more coercion. You described the case of Patty Weathers, and her son was kicked out of school because he wouldn't go on drugs. Can you talk about that?
That's correct. She actually listened to the school and placed her son on Paxil. He had a severe side effect from it. She was actually looking out the window. She lived a little bit distance from the playground, and she saw her son over in the corner shuffling his feet. And she just didn't recognize her son after a while. And then what happened was he went after her with a knife, a kitchen knife. So, you know, these psychiatric drugs induce aggression. According to the FDA, there has been MedWatch reporting of increased risk of aggression and violent behavior. So she went to the school and she said, I don't want to do this anymore. And they said, well, then he's not welcome back at school. So we helped, Patty and I, again, join forces and went to our state house legislators, and then we went to the federal level and passed the first law in the country that prohibits schools from mandating children be on psychiatric drugs in order to attend school.
Right. I mean, that is pretty concerning. And if you're up against a school and a psychiatrist says this is the diagnosis and you need this, the child needs this drug or it's going to get worse, it's a pretty tough situation to be in.
That's right.
And there's some push towards more screening at higher levels. Like, I think probably some of this is done at the school level, but there's also state and maybe even the federal government in the U.S. are looking at more screening of mental illness. Is that correct?
That's correct. Basically, in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, which I worked on that particular shooting, we have a mad rush to give the psychiatric industry and the drug companies more of our taxpayer dollars, more access to our children, more screening off of no evidence to substantiate the fact that we need more funding, because we already have a tremendous amount of funding, and the fact is we're still missing, you know, the mental health records of the Sandy Hook Newtown shooter, Adam Lanza.
Right. Well, that's definitely a question I wanted to get to. So let's just remind people about this. I'm sure most people still remember vividly the shooting. It was December 2012, the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, and that's your home state, right?
That's correct.
And Adam Lanza shot his mother first and then drove to the school. He shot and killed 20 young students and six staff members, and then shot himself, which made it the second deadliest mass shooting by one person in U.S. history. The Virginia Tech massacre with four people. So that's pretty terrible. So everybody knows, I think, that Adam Lanza had a, quote, mental illness. Do you know what he was diagnosed with?
Well, no, not exactly, and that's the problem here. The last information that we have from the mental health records is that he was seen at Yale Child Studies Center, and according to the police investigation, he was given Celexa, and he had an adverse reaction to Celexa, and Nancy Lanza called Yale Child Studies Center to report the adverse event, saying her son couldn't lift his arms, he was having all these terrible side effects, and instead of Yale Child Studies Center pointing her to the MedWatch reporting system, which is you fill out a form and you say, my son had a reaction, you get it to the FDA, and you alert the FDA, Yale Child Studies Center said that she was non-compliant.
So they started to go after her because she wasn't being cooperative.
Right. And as of today, the state claims that she refused any medication from that point on. However, Peter Lanza, the father, was interviewed by the New York reporter Andrew Solomon, whose father is the CEO of Forest Laboratories, who manufactures both Celexa and Lexapro, and it was disclosed that he was on Lexapro as well, so we're not exactly sure if he was on two drugs, multiple drugs. The records are key here because in order to pass legislation that protects public safety, we need access to the mental health records, and we're missing the last 5 years of his mental health records.
Can you describe what are Celexa and Lexapro, what kind of drugs are these, and what are the major side effects that you know of from them?
Well, they are both, I'll tell you this, they're both psychiatric drugs. They are both carry a black box suicide warning, both mandated to carry that by the FDA. For increased risk of suicide, mania, psychosis, aggression, violence, agitation, and homicidal ideation. That's ideas of murdering other people. So these two particular drugs are black box warnings on them.
Right. And that seems to bear directly on what happened at Sandy Hook. So you would think that the press, the government authorities would be all over trying to find out exactly what he was on and whether he was taking his drugs, what the dose was, all that kind of stuff. But nobody seems too interested in this. Why is that?
Well, that's a very good question. I would think that they would be very interested in that. I also think that they would be very interested in clearing up some of the some of the conflicting data in the investigation, like the GPS models that were found. And GPS is that tracking device that was found.
Right.
That's really important, and let me tell you why. Because it could highlight where Adam Lanza was prior to the shooting. Okay,
right.
He could have gone to mental health treatment centers along the way.
Okay,
but because there's a conflicting model number in the police investigative report where they say that the model number was 200, and then there's another model number of 550, so there's two different devices. One, they say, was found, the police investigative report says that it was found in Adam Lanza's closet.
Right.
While there was another one that was pulled out of the car, is there two GPSs? Why isn't this important information?
And why would he have GPS devices? Like, is there some significance to this? Seems a bit strange.
Well, you have one, a GPS device that you put in your car that
shows you
in which direction to go.
And so it installs the car.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, so one of them was installed in the car like a navigation device?
Right, but it was one of those removable ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the police investigative report says that Garmin 200 was seized from the Lanza's residence in a plastic bag in the closet. Okay, and then it goes on to say that there was another GPS model 550 that was pulled out of the car,
right,
the Honda Civic. So there's two different GPS models, and I truly believe in this mass murder investigation to place Adam Lanza in that vicinity and where he had been before. For all we know, he could have left a treatment center. We don't know. We don't know where he was. So
yeah, I mean,
that
he could have gone to a pharmacy to get his prescription filled or something. Like there could have been, or maybe he drove directly from his house to the school. It would be interesting to know, and the GPS device might have kept that information.
Right. That is important information regarding his mental health treatment. And the police investigation is riddled with inconsistencies. And Abel Childs contacted the chief medical examiner's office regarding the toxicology report, because that's where we were interested in the mental health aspect of this crime.
Mm-hmm.
So when we didn't find any answers, it forced us to read this over 6,000-page document called the police investigation.
6,000 pages.
Yes, and it is riddled with inconsistencies. It just doesn't make sense.
And what are some of the inconsistencies?
Well, for instance, if you're looking for a motive of a mass shooter that has targeted a school, you might be interested, the public might be interested to know that a sealed stamp envelope was found in Lanza's home, okay? And it was addressed to the young students of Sandy Hook Elementary School.
Right.
And that's interesting. You know,
yes, very interesting. What was in the envelope?
We don't know. But what we do know is that it was actually tested for DNA. Okay? And more importantly, though a DNA profile was obtained, none of the DNA found on the envelope matched Nancy Lanza or Adam Lanza. It actually pulled up a DNA of a profile of a known offender in New York.
A known what kind of offender?
We don't know, but there's a DNA on this envelope that's found inside of the, you know, Adam Lanza's home.
Right.
A letter addressed to the Sandy Hook Elementary School children, and on the envelope, a DNA sample of a convicted person from New York is found on that envelope.
Well, that does seem like those are two two things that everybody would want to know. It's like, what, presumably there was a letter in the envelope, and it'd be interesting to know what that said and whether that was written by an MLNZer, and who this other person was. Those definitely seem like questions that would be answered right away. I mean, there's nothing more important for motive than a letter written potentially by the murderer, especially after he's committed suicide. How else are you going to know why he did it and whether he was involved with somebody else or whether he was acting truly alone?
Exactly. You know, as an investigator, I would have, I'm not an investigator, but reading the investigative report, I would have really held Yale Child Study Center accountable for the mental health records. And I don't know if your listeners know this, but the treating psychiatrist, Dr. Paul Fox, who was named in the investigation, was actually, he was, his license was taken away by the state of Connecticut prior to the murders because he was having sex with his patient. He destroyed records and fled the country and is now in New Zealand treating young children.
Oh, that's nice. It seems to be the technique for doctors to get into trouble is to go to another place with another licensing body, and you can sort of get away with it for another little while. So he, how was he connected with Adam Lanza? He was his psychiatrist? Or?
Yes, he was his primary treating psychiatrist, according to Yale Child Study Center.
Well, that's pretty concerning. That somebody with so many problems Paul Fox, he was having sex with his patients. Was he having sex with female patients or male or both?
Well, according to the investigation, which Able Child's FOIA got a Freedom of Information Act request, he was having sex with a minor young woman at the time. And was treating her. He was actually working out of a university in the state of Connecticut, and that's how this woman ended up in his care. So the reason why this is all so important is because right now in the country, Sandy Hook mass murder-suicide is being used to push mandatory mental health screening, more funding for forced drugging, just shy of forced drugging policies. And this should concern parents, because why aren't we looking to the facts of this case?
Right. Well, when I first read that you had said that there shouldn't be mental health screening for people with a gun, I everybody would say, well, if somebody's crazy, they shouldn't have a gun. But I think your point is that if everybody who is going to get a gun license or go to school or whatever is going to get screened for mental health, then a huge number of people are going to get diagnosed and put on drugs for one condition or another, and we could actually end up with more people wanting to cause harm, and maybe they don't have a gun license, but they can get a gun from somewhere else, or they can get a knife or something like that.
That's right. The fact is that there's over 70 million Americans on psychiatric drugs.
Wait a minute. So, the population is what, 350 million?
Yeah, that's a large percentage, 70 million Americans on psychiatric drugs.
And I was saying, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say about the gun issue here is if I was concerned about who provided Adam Lanza mental health treatment and the quality of that treatment, I would want to point at everything else but what actually is occurring here. For all we know and for all the records that I've gone through, Adam Lanza received an overwhelming amount of psychiatric treatment. So that psychiatric treatment has to be looked at.
Right, so you're saying this is not a failure of the system to provide treatment. This might be the consequence of providing aggressive drug-based treatment.
That's exactly right. And the fact is that guns, you know, we need psychiatric control. You know, we need to hold psychiatrists accountable for giving children as young as Adam was. I mean, he was getting psychiatric treatment very, very young, all the way up. And in order for us to make legislative decisions, we need, as Americans, to look at those mental health records and determine where it failed. And as far as the gun issue is concerned, I'll tell you this. There's a ballistics report within this Sandy Hook police investigation, which is buried. Okay, it's fragmented throughout the report. And the gun people, the Second Amendment people, have good cause to question that ballistics report. So the fact is, this is not a gun issue. This is a mental health issue. This is a failure to admit when your treatment has gone bad.
Yes. Well, in a different situation in Calgary, where I live in Canada, a few months ago, I think in April, a guy who was diagnosed with mental illness stabbed five people. I think they were his friends. He went to a party, and I still don't know all the circumstances around it, stabbed to death five people. You know, not eliminating all the guns wouldn't eliminate the fact that people become violent. And, of course, we don't know whether or not it was the drugs that caused this, but it's a reasonable suspicion, and it's likely that the press will not consider whether the drugs themselves were causing this. They may consider the possibility that he stopped taking his drugs, but not that the drugs caused this kind of behavior. And like you say, even if guns were banned, and I'm certainly in favor of gun control myself, but even if guns were banned, if people become have these violent impulses due to the drugs, they're going to do something else. There's lots of ways to kill people.
And there's lots of ways to kill yourself, too. You know, we're talking about young children put on these medications who are hanging themselves. So, you know, the fact is that if you're going to try to stop school shootings from occurring, focusing on something that is not the cause is not going to help get into the solution. And the fact that the media, the Hartford Courant, which is our local paper that really kind of was putting out the narrative on the Sandy Hook mass murder suicide, is not interested in the fact that a letter was found to the young children of Sandy Hook, and there was a convicted person's DNA on that envelope with inside that house. If the Hartford Courant and the newspapers aren't reporting about it, you have to wonder why. You know, why is this investigation being diverted into a particular area that doesn't protect public safety?
Right. I've wondered about this myself. Like, why is this reluctance? Why is there this reluctance in the media to consider this documented danger that antidepressants and other psychoactive drugs can cause violent outbursts? If people will say it's money, but that's a little bit vague for me. Is it a fear that they'll get sued if they make an accusation like that, or if they start going down that path by the drug companies, they'll get drowned with lawyers? Like, do you have any idea why the media won't touch this?
Well, the media receives a tremendous amount of advertising from the pharmaceutical industry.
Right.
So it's their bread and butter. So putting out a story on the dangers associated with a psychiatric drug, and that's one of your major sponsors, you're going to not want that. You don't want to hurt your sponsor.
Right. But I'm sure that most reporters would say that there would never be anything like that. I think it's a little bit more, it's a little maybe deeper than more subconscious than that. They're just nervous about going there, and they want to make sure that whatever they say is 110% correct, which of course you can never get to in situations like this.
Well, I mean, you have the investigative report, which is fact-based.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have ballistics, you have toxicology reports. Those are facts. You know,
right.
A toxicology report is, you know, really critical in any investigation. And if you don't release it to the public, then, you know, as a media organization, if you don't report on it, you know, I can't get into their heads of why they do the things that they do. But as a parent organization, I could tell you this, is that it's critical for us to have this information, because right now in the United States, there is two major bills being promoted to screen more children and do more investing as a country into this particular avenue, which is psychiatric drugs and massive screening. So,
these are federal bills.
There's two federal bills right now. Representative Congressman Tim Murphy has, and the title sounds really wonderful. It's mental health crisis bill. We, you know, improve mental health, and basically, it's really a good tagline, but the fact is, if you're not willing to look at the mental health records of those who committed these horrendous acts in schools, and you're not willing to talk about the mental health that was given to these people, then how are you going to improve the mental health when you're just going to pour more money into the psychiatric industry, the same industry that's drugging these shooters?
Right. If I wanted to promote the well-being, financial well-being of psychiatrists, I would pour money into screening because that's the gateway to the psychiatric system. And,
yes.
I mean, is that what these bills will do, or are they...
Yes. And Tim Murphy says he doesn't want, you know, people's concern about their liberty and their civil rights is misplaced. And my organization and my parents would argue absolutely not. We strongly hold that we want to send our children to school, we want them safe, and we want to make sure that you're not diagnosing our children with mental illnesses based on subjective checklists. We want to send them to school to learn how to read and write and to reason.
Right. But, I mean, you're going up against the whole modus operandi of the psychiatric doctors, right? I mean, the checklist is how they operate. What are your symptoms? What DSM category do they match?
Well, I would say I'm not really going up against the psychiatric industry or the drug companies. What I'm doing is defending our public school systems. They're trying to enter it, and I'm saying, as a co-founder of Able Child, is no, you have no right to enter this building, because this institution is a learning institution. It's not a prescribing institution. If a parent wants to go seek out a psychiatrist, there's practically one on every corner.
Yes, and this will definitely benefit them, but I was commenting to somebody yesterday, or I think that one of the problems with the medical industry is it's based on high financial growth rates. Like, the pharmaceutical industry wants to have not just big profits, but profits that increase every year. And the psychiatric industry, the doctors want to have more billing and more doctors. But at some point, when you've got 70 million Americans on psychiatric drugs, at some point, all you're left with are people who don't want to be on the drugs. And then what do you do? The whole thing starts to collapse at that point because there aren't increased profits every year, and there's more people going off the drugs than are going on them because they've experienced side effects. But by the time we get to that point, the problems created by the drugs are going to be far worse than they are today.
Well, you know, I agree to the sense that to the degree that they are marketing and they want to make a profit, and, you know, certainly Able Child is not standing in their way to do that. They can make a profit all they want, but, you know, the consequences is that children are dying because they're not being given informed consent. When you only give a parent one particular sheet of paper that says, if you don't put your child on drugs, awful things are going to happen, and you don't tell them that the drugs could be the awful thing that happens, then that to me is a marketing issue that they really need to straighten out, which our organization is always willing to help the drug companies provide more informed consent to the consumer.
Right.
You know, and there is a, I have to say, with the school shootings that are happening on a regular basis now, not only in the United States, but now we have this awful killing in France of a mother going in and stabbing a teacher to death in front of
right.
children.
You
know, the first question people ask is, was that person on psychiatric drugs?
Yeah.
There's a difference between being needing mental health help
right.
and being on psychiatric drugs. You know, just because you have mental challenges, whether you have autism, psychiatric drugs do not cure autism. They don't.
Yeah.
You know,
well, because nobody understands the cause for these mental problems, and the drugs don't address the cause, so all they can really do is mask symptoms at the very best.
Right, and the fact that the media does ask the question after a school shooting, was that person being treated, was that person on psychiatric drugs, is a big win for parents. It's a big win for the consumer because people are talking, whether the mass media in the United States doesn't want to address this because of their sponsorship or because they just don't think it's a valid argument, I would say the black box warning is a valid argument.
Right. And you were involved with getting black box warnings on antidepressants?
Yes, I actually saw, you know, when I heard that you had David Healy on, I actually met David Healy at the FDA hearings where parents were bringing in pictures of their dead children, and
right.
it was an unbelievable hearing. It was amazing, you know, and I really admire him, and I thought he, you know, really was very articulate, and we won the black box warning for the consumer. You know,
right.
That is for the consumer, and it, you know what, it's marketing in blood of children that are not talked about in the media. You know, like Shayna Dunkel, her death got the black box warning on those on the psychiatric drugs.
Can you describe what happened to her?
Sure, I had mentioned her before that she was diagnosed in school as being mentally ill, and Vicky,
okay.
the mom, put her, listened to the school, and then she ended up dying in her arms at the hospital.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the fact is right now in America, they are constantly using the victims of Sandy Hook, of the surviving families, to push all this gun control and, you know, get out there and you know, if you question the investigation, all of a sudden you're like marked as somebody, you know, who's, I guess, not on the right side of the discussion. However, you know, it's parents that I work with that their children's death will never be known to the public, you know. So, you know, I always never liked when politicians hide behind victims. And actually, Able Child hardly mentions the children that died that we work with, not because we don't honor their deaths, but we try not to use victims to get policy made. We try to use facts.
Yeah, it can be very powerful, especially, but I mean, often the stories are twisted. But you said, you know, the media is starting to talk about it, but, you know, the media needs to shift from looking at, you know, what was the role of the psychiatric drugs? Were they needed and not used? Were they being used? Was there a recent withdrawal? Like, they need to look at the entire picture as opposed to, oh, here's another mentally ill person who wasn't taking his drugs who needed them. That's sort of the acceptable story that goes on in the media.
Right, and, you know, again, the legislation in the aftermath of Sandy Hook should be psychiatric control, not gun control, psychiatric control. And, you know, there should be an audit done of Yale Child Study Center. Records should be pulled, given to lawmakers, and have the lawmakers review the records so they can be, you know, in the light when they make decisions on public safety.
I mean, it's almost universal that when there's a violent event, a mass shooting or stabbing or something like that, it's almost universal that the person had some experience with psychiatric drugs. I mean, it's almost always you'll see at least a side reference to this person was struggling with depression or struggling with mental illness or something like that. There'll never be very many details, but it's almost always a mention.
Right, and then that child's life is not only ruined, but all the people that have been ruined in the degree of his or her reach on those psychiatric drugs. And the fact remains is Adam Lanza's psychiatrist is, for all we know, on the beach somewhere in New Zealand. And there's never in any of the... There's one case in the Colorado movie theater killing where that psychiatrist was sued. And, you know, that it took the state of Connecticut over a year to release the name of the treating psychiatrist. A year.
I wonder why.
Well, that's unacceptable. I mean, that's why we need to focus on psychiatric control.
Yeah.
Not gun control.
Right. In the remaining few minutes of this interview, I want to go back to, okay, so you've got a child who is staring out the window, is disruptive in class or whatever, showing behaviors that the teacher is saying indicate that the child's not learning properly, that a child's disruptive to the class. If a parent doesn't want to consider drugs, what kinds of things can they look into to try to deal with these problems?
Well, that's an excellent question. The gifted child is often misdiagnosed as ADHD, and the fact is that a lot of children that are really truly gifted in certain areas like mathematics and excel quite above their norm are often misdiagnosed. And even children that don't have really high IQs can always benefit from speech and language services, skill building. I would stay far away from psychiatric services at young ages recommended through the public education system. The public education system should be geared on developing skill building. And behavior is a direct result of communication. So focusing on how a child communicates, cause and effect is in language, is really key to developing a child's behavior, because you're dealing with teaching the child how to communicate. What's bothering you? Why are you reacting this way? So there's excellent, I highly suggest parents look up any material for gifted children. There's great workbooks out there. There's great alternatives such as Sylvan Learning Center and Kaplan Learning Centers. That's the avenue I would go. I was very successful with my son who, you know, looked out the window. He was very disruptive, and now he works for a PR firm, and he's very creative. And I used outside tutoring centers.
Right. Did you change anything in your lifestyle, like how you interacted with him, diet, exercise, access to computers? Like, were there other things that you changed apart from going to these learning centers?
Yes. One of the other things is that my son always lost his books and his materials, so I went to the school and I got a second set of books to leave at home. So when he would lose his books, it would be like, well, you still need to get the assignment done. We'll work on getting you organized and trying to figure out how to remember things better, but tonight the assignment is X, Y, and Z. Because if your child misses that assignment and then the next day is unprepared, that is defeating in their self-esteem. So there's little things, very little things that you can do that can really help how your child interacts in the classroom.
Yeah, and those things can be, I mean, it's like tripping over a little pebble on the sidewalk. It can still hurt pretty hard. And even though it seems like a small thing, it's like, oh, I failed again. I came home without my books. I forgot. Why am I always forgetting? I'm a failure. And so it like doubles the impact of what a small thing becomes quite big. And so were there like multiple little things that you were able to change to sort of help him?
Yes, I also did this thing called mind mapping. And it's where if there's an incident at school where your child gets in trouble, you have your child map it out in, draw pictures. What happened first? You know, why did you react this way? And you do like a little boxes and you have them, what happened first? And then your child tells you what occurred through simple pictures. And what you might find is that your child was actually targeted by another child and really didn't know how to stand up and defend himself or was embarrassed by the teacher. So it's like...
And also they're analyzing their own behavior, which is always a good thing because people tend to do things without really thinking about it. So going back, maybe they see things like, gee, why did I do that? Why didn't I do that differently?
That's right. And how can you handle that differently next time? How would that make you feel if you could handle that differently next time?
Yeah. So just hands-on, thinking about what the issues are and trying to come up with creative solutions, I think, can be...
Yeah, and there's tons of creative solutions. I mean, that's the key here is our children are not born evil. They're not born with these disorders, as the psychiatrist would like us to believe. They're born gifted human beings, all of them. No matter if you're disabled or you're abled, the fact is that you bring a unique gift to this world, and it's through a good teacher and a good mom who mom and dad who are focused on making sure their child is well fed before they send them off to school, etc.
Yeah, because, I mean, schools are institutions that have to deal with a lot of people with a lot of different personalities, and parents have to keep an eye on whether things are going well, and they don't need the school just saying, you need drugs. That music tells me that we're at the end of another episode, and I'd really like to thank you for a very informative discussion on psychiatric drugs and Sandy Hook and a few other things as well. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.